from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in your attic, your basement, your garage, your living room, where items that you thought, you never know, maybe they're worthless, maybe they're worth a fortune, or maybe that rusty old fan that your grandmother left you, maybe it really is just junk. This hour, the College of Collectible Knowledge returns to Connections. It's our version of Antiques Roadshow, but it's better. It's radio, and it is so fun to hear what people have and the stories behind them. Our guests, I told them before the hour began, I think they know everything about everything. Now, Yvonne's going to tell me not quite, but we're going to find out this hour. Don't wait. If you've got items that you want answers for, antiques, I don't know if I can use that term, that's another controversial term, vintage, all kinds of things, kicking around that you've wondered about, this is a great chance to call and try to get some information. Call the program, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. If you're calling from Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. If you want, you can email photos of your items, connections@WXXI.org. We will talk about your questions, your antiques, your items, and we're going to talk about some trends in the antiquing world and tell you about an event that is coming up with our guests here. It's great to have Yvonne Jordan back, owner of Shop 15 Antiques and Vintage.
Hi, Evan.
Great
we're
to
back.
Have you. The
Yay.
College is back here.
We're back.
And Jack and Nick. Jack Wanderman's the owner of Jack Wanderman Associates. Always good, Jack. Welcome back.
Thank you to be here.
And Nick Wanderman, Jack's son and partner in Jack Wanderman Associates. Nick, welcome to you as well.
Welcome.
Well, it's awesome. It's always fun for us here. And listeners, please don't wait. Again, 844-295-TALK, because somebody's going to call late in the hour, and they're not going to be able to get through. But if you can't, that's okay, because the reason they are here is to tell you about an event coming up 8 days from now. That's Saturday, April 21st, from 10 to 2. It's the WXXI Annual Appraisal Fair right here at the WXXI Studios. 10 to 2 next Saturday, 8 days from now. Tickets are $30. You can purchase them online. That's the easiest way to do that. We'll put it on our podcast page or go to WXXI.org. You can get tickets at the door. Easier to get them online. And it's always fun to see there. Isn't it always amazing, Yvonne, what people have?
It is absolutely amazing what comes through those doors every year.
Wow.
We have so much fun. It's just, I get to sit at the front desk, so I get to see everything.
Well, I'm going to challenge you first here, because let's start with emails. Corey and Shalott emails and sends, he says, a green vase he bought at Goodwill a couple of years ago. He originally thought it was beautiful, but now he says he's not so sure. I'm going to hand it to Yvonne.
Okay, Corey, I looked at your face and I looked at the mark on the bottom. It's a Japanese copy of what we call the Baroque style with the little naked putty flying around on the sides of it. I don't think you told me how big it was, but I'm going to guess that it's about 8 inches tall. And in the current market, the Japanese stuff has fallen off quite a bit. It doesn't say Nippon on it. So probably, you know, it's in the $10 or $15 range at this point in time. Who knows what'll happen over the next 20 years?
$10 or $15? Jack wants to see it. Jack's getting up to see here. I'm going to send it back over there. Go ahead there, guys. That's it? $10 or $15?
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry to say,
which
yes.
Represents probably about a 15,000 times ROI, probably given what he paid.
What am I hearing? Oh, that's Jack who's scruffing up against the microphone over there, Mr. Wanderman. All right, so Jack's comfortable. He's back in his chair. We're ready to go. So, Corey, sorry, right out of the gate, we've got disappointment. But Corey sent several things. So he also sent, he says, here is a Chinese drawing. He brought it from an antique dealer in Newark about 8 years ago. He says he and his wife lived abroad for many years, and he collected this from either China or Korea. And I'm going to send this over to Jack. Or
yes,
Yvonne, you
we're
going
to send these over to Jack, but my guess is that they're actually very nice black prints, but we're sending that over to Jack for a little more detail.
These are Japanese woodblock prints. They're by a series by Hiroshige, and they're of the different stations of Tokaido. He did a whole series of those. There were 56 woodblock prints of different scenes along the route, and this is a winter scene. Winter scenes are more desirable. The seal mark on this is of the publisher, and I'd have to trace that down and see what the actual printing is. The earlier the additions on the printing, sometimes the better the pieces are, but this particular print again, because it's of a by a famous artist, a scene that is very well known in Japanese art, I would put a value on this of probably about $200 to $300.
Okay.
And it depends on what the series is. Most of them were decorative 20th century, and they made a lot of them. So you'll see some that are six figures, and you'll see some that are $20. And statistically speaking, you probably have about a 99.9% chance of hitting one that even exceeds $100 to $200. They're all over the internet.
Wow. So, and where's the market? If you actually wanted to try to cash that in, where can you do it?
The bigger the better. Probably Europeans or Americans are the biggest buyer of traditional Japanese art. It's not the Japanese. They buy French art glass and Renoirs. They're not that interested in their traditional things.
A lot of collectors here in the United States.
How do you find them?
Well,
balloons usually are good. Banners.
No. If you have a network built up, we've done a few sales and appraisals of very well-known collections of Japanese woodblock prints, but the internet is probably one of the best ways to sell those, unless you go to an auction house. There are auction houses that specialize in Japanese prints, so you'd have to either find one of them or try the internet. But generally speaking, if you put them in a sale locally, you're not going to be selling them to connoisseurs that have a widespread knowledge of their value.
Although Rochester has a very good market locally, there's a lot of people that really do appreciate woodblock prints and Japanese art. Going back and forth between here and New York, I'm surprised the people I see at the New York auction houses from Rochester. It's like, hey, wait a second, I know this person and this person. I should have just stayed in Rochester if I want to see all the Rochester people in New York. So it's the same thing.
All right, listeners, lines are open, 844-295-TALK. It's the College of Collectible Knowledge. You have antiques. You've got questions about items in your house or in your family. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI in Rochester, 263-9994. Take a picture, email it to us at connections@WXXI.org, or do what my colleague Denise just did, which is walk into the studio with something that looks horrifying to me. Denise, you got to get really close to the microphone as you describe what is this thing.
Okay, so this is...
It's actually not that horrifying when I see it in person. It's kind of lovely.
It's pretty creepy. My best friend hates it.
Okay.
When we lived together when we were in our 20s, she didn't want it in our apartment. I found this, I was about, I think, 13, early 80s, walking down my street in Buffalo, where I lived at the time, and she and another doll, just like this, but in a green dress, were in a box at the curb. So we just picked it up, and I kept mine. I don't know if my friend kept hers, though. And I don't know anything about it.
It's about 3 feet long. I mean, it's big.
It is. It's quite long. It's kind of like cloth underneath. It has like a porcelain face or some kind of, I don't know if it's porcelain, but it's has a hard face and soft body.
Why did you keep it?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Because it was free and it was fascinating.
Are you a hoarder?
It's probably because it freaks all my friends out. So, you know, it's kind of a conversation piece.
All right, so Yvonne's holding it now. Jack, Nick, Yvonne, what do you think?
So I can tell you this much. This doll looks like it's from the 20s.
It's a Madame Alexander.
It is a Madame Alexander.
It's a Madame Alexander.
Did you find a name on it somewhere?
No, but I recognize it.
All right,
him.
So Jack recognizes it. It's a composite body.
Yep.
It's our composite chest and head, and the body's actually cloth.
Original clothing.
The feet and the hands are... And is this supposed to be a bride? Is that what this big veil is?
Yeah. I assume so, yeah.
Is it... The clothes look like they're original.
Yeah, I would say yes. It's yellowed with age. Yeah. It's considerably yellowed with age. It's missing one thumb, which actually allows you to see the composite of what it's made out of. So Jack says, Madame Alexander, what do we have for a price estimate, Jack?
Oh, on that one, probably you're looking at $300 to $400.
Yeah.
The more fingers it's missing, the better.
Yeah.
You've waited long enough. You need to cash in, Denise.
Wow, yeah.
So, but would you have any idea where you could sell it?
No.
So how do you
no clue.
So Denise has never done something like this. Where do you get to take this thing if you want to get $300 or $400?
The Salvation Army is a great starting point. No, donate it. Seriously, donate it.
She doesn't want to donate it.
She wants the money.
Take the tax deduction.
She wants the money.
I would either try giving it to an auction house or trying the internet with it.
The one thing that usually occurs with an auction house, though, is that they tend to go very conservative on the estimate. So you may get a valuation for $200 to $300 and then get a $40 to $60 estimate from an auction house and see how it does.
Right.
And then it sells for $300 and, oh, well, it did great. Well, yeah, it was maybe a $300 thing to be
well,
with.
But
so
there are lots of other options these
days.
You know, you can do that Let It Go app. And what's the other one around here that just started up a little while ago?
The Let It Go app?
Really?
Yes, there's a app for your phone. It's similar to Craigslist, only it's different. It's easier. And it seems to have a lot of action on it these days. So if you're, I would try something like that first, because you get auctions, you can't control the price.
Right, right.
So with something like that, you absolutely can.
Do you know how to do eBay?
Actually, no, I've never been on eBay.
Well, then I would start with one of the easier apps.
It's just
first.
In such poor condition, though. I can't
it's
imagine.
It's not really.
No?
No.
Really?
No.
Not for something that's almost 100 years old.
This
well,
is satin,
good point.
You know, it's probably a silk satin. My 20s, is that what we thought year-wise?
Yeah. 1920. Is it a mohair or a natural?
I don't know, but her hair's glued to her cheeks, which is kind of different.
Yeah. Too much.
We should have a follow-up. We should meet you again in 6 months and see how it did.
All right, Denise, so you've got the, what's the app, Yvonne, again? What's it called?
It's called Let It Go.
Let It Go.
And I'm trying to remember what the other one is that you can do off of your phone.
Okay.
EBITDA, I think, something like that.
Okay, so Denise,
something like that,
you got to report back to us on who you unloaded this creepy doll on.
I will do that for sure.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Denise. Thanks, guys. All right, 844-295-TALK. Let's get to your phone calls. And I'm going to start down in Interlaken. This is Joe first up. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi. I've got an old Alaska coal stove. It's not terribly old, probably 50 years. It's recently stopped working. I'm just wondering if anybody knows if anybody would be interested in it if it's beyond me to get it working again.
Yeah. I would try Craigslist for something like that.
Is this the room size stove or the house size stove?
House size stove. It's one of the hearth models, the cast iron on it.
Okay.
For the outside shell is a lot nicer than any of the ones you can buy even from them now.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I wasn't. Yeah, it's a lot more decorative and nicer looking.
So there's got to be somebody down there around Ithaca that's doing stove work. I'm not really familiar with that area. I would just, list it on your local Craigslist. I mean, do you want it fixed for yourself, or are you trying to get rid of it?
I'm not sure, and I heard the program on.
Right,
and
right. Okay.
I wanted to know if anybody knew if this was something that people do, if they come across these, if they know anyone that fixes up the older models, because if I can't get exactly the right part and put it in, then it's beyond what I can fix.
Have you contacted the company?
Alaska itself has very little to do with.
Are they still in business?
They are still in business, but they don't handle stoves this old anymore.
Okay.
All right. If I have a part or a part number.
Well, there's a place here in Rochester called Historic House Parts. I would just give them a call and ask them who they would send a stove to for repair or replacement parts and see what they have to say about it. Or if there's somebody down in your area that does house parts, old house parts, there's got to be somebody down there.
Yeah, there's someone in Geneva, but the part that's not working, I don't think I'm going to be able to get a hold of. And so I was wondering if anyone knew someone who, remade them is what I was wondering.
You'd have to do a little searching on the internet.
I don't have an off-the-top-of-my-head answer to that.
What would probably happen is somebody would probably be looking at it predominantly as scrap. I mean, we're in a lot of estates, and people just end up scrapping them. The part you want to buy, somebody who's probably charged you more than the whole stove is worth, just because you're in need, and that's their perception.
Look online, see if you can buy the stove, another one that might have parts.
What is your intentions to do with the stove?
We lost Joe in Interlaken, but Joe, good luck to you.
Good luck.
Good luck with the stove.
Yes.
And a lot of good information there. We've got lines lit up now.
Okay.
Let's go to Mary Jane in Penfield next. Mary Jane, go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. My father has 4 Ralph Avery prints from the Mercury series.
Okay. What size?
They're large. They're probably like about 10 by 14 prints.
Okay.
And
okay.
21 by 17 frames.
Are they? Okay. They're probably lithographs.
Yeah, she said they're prints.
Yeah, they're prints.
Okay.
Yes, they are prints. Although I think we have Ralph Avery's signature on 1 or 2 of them.
Okay.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of those were actually, unless you can take them out of the frames and look at them, a lot of those were issued as calendar prints. A lot of them were issued, believe it or not, as placemats. There have been many, many, many runs of his prints. Not a huge amount of interest around
no,
here.
No, not anymore.
Lately, not anymore.
Really?
No,
and he
no.
was local, but just like Emil Gruppe, for instance, who was kind of local, his paintings have a large following, whereas Ralph Avery, kind of the interest has been lost since the strength that it had during the 80s and 90s. But pieces that we've had, you know, you kind of like have to tug teeth out to get between $100 and $200 for those.
Yeah, you'd be very
in that
lucky
size.
To get that.
Really?
Yeah. But
okay.
The other...
Again, it's a question of the people that valued them and had them in their homes are all downsizing and the market's being flooded.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that just keeps showing up over and over and over again. And
now that all the baby boomers are... going into retirement homes. Hopefully that's not my fate.
Thanks, Jack.
It's an iceberg. Don't worry.
That's right.
It's the way the market flows,
well, Nick,
but every generation is
I don't have to worry because Nick is going to put me on an iceberg.
That's good.
Boy. The bonfire in the center.
I didn't know the College of Collectible Knowledge was here to air out the family dirty laundry.
I'm staying out of this.
Stay out of it. Let's get back to the phones. Mike in Spencerport next. Go ahead, Mike.
These are actually pretty good. We have a 3x5 Debris prayer rug.
Debris prayer rug, yep. From the city of Debris, and it has the, you're sure it's a prayer rug?
Yes.
Okay, is it silk or wool?
I'm sorry, it's a pictorial rug.
A pictorial rug, okay, that's not a prayer rug. Got figures like some of the rulers of Persia?
Yep.
Okay. Is it wool or silk?
Wool. My understanding is that the language that's depicted on here is Farsi. Does that sound great?
I'm sorry, what?
The language, I think the writing on it is, I believe, Farsi.
Okay.
Farsi.
Okay.
Farsi.
A big factor in determining the value of that will be the age of the pictorial rug. Some of the pictorial rugs from the late 19th and early 20th century can go in the thousands of dollars. If it was something that was acquired in the bazaar, let's say in Iran during the 70s or 80s, it's contemporary more or less and doesn't have a tremendous amount of value. How did you acquire this rug?
Well, remember the came through an auction.
Where?
We bought it at auction.
Okay. And was it a local auction?
Yes. It was one of the former rug marketers in town.
Okay. It was probably Thomas Paddock?
Yes.
Okay. Thomas Paddock, towards the end, he had somebody come in and run the auctions for them, and they brought in a lot of merchandise from New York that was hard to sell in New York, so they thought a sale in upstate New York would go better. So most of those rugs that were brought in were not sought after by collectors, but by decorative parties. And those rugs don't have a lot of value, unfortunately.
Okay.
Did you pay under $1,000 or over $1,000?
Over $1,000.
Okay. It probably is worth what you paid for it, but if you went to sell it, you'll take a bath on it. The market for new rugs is just not what the market is for the old antique rugs, which are coveted all over the world. So enjoy
it. Try for a private sale with somebody.
Yeah.
Neighbors are great.
Yeah, neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah. Or wait until somebody comes into your house and say, oh, I love that rug. And then you can have your reply, well, do you want to buy it?
No, the first thing you're supposed to say is it's not for sale.
No, that's right.
Well, now I've got to have it.
All right, so let me get a couple of emails, and then we've got a ton more calls. We're going to break a record this hour with the College of Collectible Knowledge.
All right, let's go for it.
So Samantha says, I'd like to know from your guests, what is the best way to seek a buyer for items once you have established value? My main concern is being taken advantage of due to a lack of knowledge in the antiques market. How can I find and or know I'm dealing with someone fair and reputable? It's a good question.
If you are going to try and sell your items to dealers, then you're going to have to realize that they are not going to pay you full retail value for your items. So if you go to what we call the secondary or private market, and you know what you're asking, then you just, you know, if you put it on Etsy or you put it on eBay, you just have to set your price and stick to it.
What?
You know, or if you're going to take, if you're going to put it on eBay and do a buy it now or a best offer, then you have to build in whatever you're going to mark it down. So,
and be willing to wait 20 or 30 years to that.
No, it
magic.
Just depends. It depends. eBay is very tough these days. They expect you to list it 3 times and mark it down every time. And, you know, that's really annoying.
The first thing I would do if you're not sure what the value is, have it appraised. There are people that will come in and appraise your merchandise. We're one of them. Yvonne can do it. But you've got to establish a value so that you have a basic point for starting a price to sell it.
Well, I find actually that doing a image search online is often a very good way to get an idea if you're in a price range that you want to pay somebody for an evaluation. Because if you find your object online and there's 25 of them and people are asking, you know, around the same price point, then you can pretty much figure out that that's what it's going to be.
What the ballpark's going to be.
Days.
Yeah. Anything you want to add there, Nick?
It's tough because you're going to see retail dealers that may have had that piece online for 10 years, which is normal in an image search. And I've watched inventory sit there for years. And then clients go on and have something that they feel is similar. And then that's the price it's worth. And very little can change their mind about that. So, you know, insofar as finding someone that you feel you can trust is yourself, because if you see someone make what you feel is too much beyond the price that they paid, you're not going to be happy about it. There's a big emotional connection to what pieces sell for, what pieces don't go sold. So you have to really get in line with your emotional connection to the property that you're trying to bring to market.
And the market fluctuates for objects in a very short period of time. Even 5 years ago, if something bringing 1,000 could be bringing 400 now, because collectors and decorators are very fickle, so it's a touch and go thing.
Plus, there's been a shakedown in the market. A lot of the longtime collectors that are in my age group are not really acquiring things anymore, unless they're the very, very finest examples at a reasonable price. People that age group are getting rid of things. They're not accumulating, but if they do buy them, they want the best. So you're going into a pitfall because the younger people have different tastes and criteria for collecting. They like mid-century modern. They like particular collectibles in certain genres.
I run into this a lot in the shop, and these days I just tell people, bring it in, and if I know anything about it, I'll help you find out what it's worth, because there's just so much out there that it's really hard when you have a few items that you're looking to dispose of.
All right, before I get back to John and Henrietta, a couple of written questions. Michael in Canandaigua says he's got a baseball signed by Joe DiMaggio. Any value there?
Yes,
depends if he actually signed it.
if it's real. Let's assume for a second that it's real. What kind of value can we expect?
You have to say, is it the only signature? Is it the signature of, like, the whole team? Is it from a particular year?
I'm going to assume he's got with just one signature. It's Joe DiMaggio, and it's real. What can we expect out of that?
Oh, boy. First you have to have it authenticated. If they authenticate it, then it's probably going to be $500 or $600. It's not a huge amount, I don't think, because wasn't he?
That sounds like a lot.
He was, I think he was fairly prolific in his
signing
thing.
That's a good point.
Well, here's a good example. So you're seeing retail dealers ask anywhere between $700 to $7,000. So for the general public to make sense of what they're seeing on the internet is only really done by somebody who's been in the business for 20, 30 years to make sense of it. It's just like the financial market. You'd bring in a financial an advisor.
Well, we're actually having a sports memorabilia appraiser coming to the appraisal fair on the 21st.
8 days from now, 10 to 2 at WXXI. You need to be here. $30 a ticket. Bring the ball. And Gabe writes to us and says, I've got a warm-up jacket for the 1980 USA Olympic hockey team. Of course, that's the one that beat the Russians. He says it was worn by goalkeeper Jim Craig during the opening and closing ceremonies. It has the ice hockey patch on the front and 1980 Olympics on it. It is red, white, and blue. Any ideas what that might be worth?
Whatever someone will pay for it.
that's a very interesting item. I think it would generate a lot of interest, and it's also almost a one-off. I mean, it is specific to that
700
person.
700 to 1,000 could go for 2,000. A hockey collector, you just don't know.
Yeah.
It could go for $400. It just
what I would
on.
Recommend is sending us that information with your contact
or
information.
Or coming to the fair.
Yeah. I mean, specialized pieces like that need to have further research done than the research that we have at the tip of our fingers.
Right.
So that
Olympic stuff is just a whole,
it's a special category.
It's a very specialized category, but it's definitely worth looking into. Yeah. I would, let your kids wear it.
And going back to that Joe DiMaggio baseball, I'm seeing one for $1,800 that's signed Joe DiMaggio and 25 members of the league. So that's a price point.
Okay.
So, that's a team ball, though, probably.
Yeah, a team ball.
Yeah,
that's right.
25 other people on
and
it.
And then there's a Joe DiMaggio.
Babe Ruth.
There's a Joe DiMaggio baseball for $130 with a single signature.
Okay, so anywhere from $130 to a couple thousand, we'll say,
$1,500.
So good luck to you guys. Let me get back to John and Henrietta on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Hi. Hi, Evan. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Enjoying this conversation. I have a poster from a Robert Rauschenberg exhibit in at the Ace Gallery in Los Angeles, in Venice, California. And it's signed by Rauschenberg to me.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's for John, Robert Rauschenberg. And the poster is huge. It's 72 by 52 inches.
Oh, wow. That is huge. So the poster itself on its own was probably done in many multiples just specifically for that show. So I'm not sure what the value there is. But the signature and the dedication certainly give it a certain cachet.
Jack, have you found anything?
Have you looked anything up under
that? That size is unusual. Give me one more second here.
I have my guess, but I don't want to hear an echo after.
No, let's...
Write it down, Nick. Write it down so we can all see what it is. So in any size, what are you finding for an autographed poster? Jack.
I'm not
dead air
finding
time.
Anything.
Countdown. 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
Do you want us to move to other items? Jack can come back to that.
Yeah.
Because Annie and Brighton emailed us, and she said she's got photos of a pocket watch that she found in her grandfather's things after he passed away. He was in Okinawa, Japan during World War II. She says, I don't know if he collected it there or not, and says, sorry, I don't have any other info. I'm wondering where this came from.
Yeah, Nick, you looked at this one earlier, I think.
Well, I'm passing the hat here. I'll say 1,500 to 2,000 on the poster, maybe 2,000 to 3,000.
Yep,
depends on the subject matter. It's too bad if you were able to pick up any oils or sculptures of his at the time.
Okay.
But that's probably a market value.
First of all, I'd wonder if there was anything on the back that was written or on the dial. It's a porcelain dial with a silver case and fob. It is definitely 19th century, but the maker name in that will be of significance in valuing it. Some of the early silver pocket watches are actually doing well in the marketplace today. This one has some engraving done on the case. Again, the works. And if you open the back of the watch, you'll see some kind of engraving or name. That would be the criteria for giving a value. Without seeing that, I'm giving you a value of $250 on that.
Okay. John and Henrietta, any follow-up questions for our panel?
No, just get an idea of what it might be worth. I've looked it up in the past. I don't know if the signature makes any difference, but be interested in what your guests
Nick just gave us.
Yeah, Nick said what, 2,000 to 3,000.
We're talking on the poster, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I would think probably it depends on the subject matter. If there's it's a huge piece, you know, a huge image of one of his works, then it could go more. And I'm sure you'll see some dealer in some major metro city asking 10 times that price.
Can you repeat what you said?
What was the number?
1,500 to 2,000, yeah. 2,000 to 3,000, maybe more. It depends on what the subject is.
Wow.
But it's worth something.
John,
it's created originally for that show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, but he signed it, and that's...
And I don't know if the signature adds... I assume the signature adds value to it.
Yeah,
multiple. Are you saying that the printed image was created for that show?
Yeah, just an exhibition.
Yes.
But it's an exhibition poster.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, did you say next price?
Nick's probably right on.
1,500 to 2,000,
yeah,
2,000 to 3,000.
That's an accurate price.
Okay. John.
So go ahead,
one more.
So we're if you wanted to sell it, which I probably won't do in my lifetime, but what would be the next, where would you take it to sell something like that?
Well, after your lifetime, things might have changed. So ask the question then.
Is it framed? Do you have it framed?
Yes, it is framed.
It's framed. Okay. Oh, that's good. At that point, probably an auction house or a local art dealer.
There's a guy that comes on the Antiques Roadshow that's always dressed in a funny 1970s suit.
Yeah, he's the poster guy.
Yeah, where's he from, Nick? Which
he owns Swans.
Swans. So Swans is a good outlet for vintage posters.
Don't send it in the frame. They'll throw the frame out.
Yeah.
All right, I see the phone ringing, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The College of Collectible Knowledge is here. Yvonne Jordan, Jack, and Nick Wanderman. We always have fun finding out what our listeners have that they want some information on. And it's a great chance for you not only to call today to find out, but if you can't do today, you really should call 258-0200 to purchase a ticket 8 days from now. That's 2 Saturdays from now. Saturday, April 21st, is the WXXI annual appraisal event. Please be here for that, 10 to 2, right here at our State Street building.
That's sobering that it's a week away.
Yeah, we better be ready.
My aunt used to say, as you get older, the time goes by quicker. She was right.
Well, let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come right back, because I've got a ton more of your stuff to work through.
Okay.
Great questions for our panel. We're right back here on Connections. And let me tell you what's coming up Monday on The Next Connections. An update on news from Ukraine. We'll talk to the country's defense attaché, who's going to be in Rochester. Then in our second hour, how likely are we to experience another flu pandemic? We'll talk to doctors and researchers from the University of Rochester about flu strains and what we should expect in the coming years. That's all coming up Monday on The Next Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mindy in Penfield sends a picture of her late 1950s Weber Baby Grand Piano. What do we think about value of a late 50s Weber Baby Grand?
Okay. Are they ivory keys?
It's a good question.
We don't know. All we have is the picture.
Are they usually yes or no?
Depends.
Yeah, the older
the
50s, ones.
There's, it might the, very yeah. well be
yeah.
ivory keys. Those, we don't know if it's plays or if the strings yeah. are all in there. Or...
Very difficult because pianos, when you buy them from someone that refurbishes them, cost a moon. And when you buy them from someone else, they cost a bag of groceries. It really just depends.
They cost the price of moving heavy.
Yeah, basically.
Playing it safe, I would say $1,500 to $2,000,
yeah.
though some of the models that are not quite as desirable in the baby grands can sell for as little as $250.
It's what you can get someone to pay for it when yeah. you need to sell it.
Yes, pretty much.
It's worth whatever someone will pay.
And in like Rochester with a music school, there's just pianos everywhere. Everywhere.
There is a gentleman in Canandaigua, Glad, I think it's Steve Glad, who has used pianos, and he could probably give you some advice.
There
okay,
you go.
Good luck,
all right.
Mindy, on that. This is from Danielle. She sends a couple of pictures. Two vintage prints with great detail depicting the interiors of, she thinks, a 19th century German home. So here are these. Any idea where these might be from?
They do probably look like they're either German or Scandinavian interiors. And I don't recognize any particular artist. I don't see any signature under the on the mats or the edging. I can't really tell if they're matted or not. But they look like these are were reproduced in multiples. I don't see. They look like the kind of thing that was generally distributed sometime in the late 30s and early 40s up into the 50s for decorative purposes. And I don't think that they have terrible value.
No, much
at
value?
This point. No.
Okay.
No. You know, if I had them in the shop, I probably wouldn't ask more than $35 for the pair of them.
Okay.
So unfortunately, that's
that one.
All
this
I
one's
can
a not. I don't know if it's a bit of a bust for you, but there's an answer. Let me get back to the phones. Dawn in Syracuse. This is Dawn next. Go ahead, Dawn.
Hi there. I mean, I actually live in Syracuse, and I'm here in Rochester
okay.
on business, and I just turned on the radio, and I purchased a set of absolutely gorgeous. China in a shop and very, very inexpensively. I mean, I turned, it has a very elaborate gold trim.
Can you tell us, is there a name on the back?
You know, and that's, I'm here in Rochester.
Oh, you don't have
China's
it with you.
In Syracuse. And no. There is a stamp on the back and I can't remember if it's 22 karat gold or 24 karat gold, but it's
Right, the rims have been, or the whatever the floral decoration is, have been highlighted in gold.
Yeah,
it's not even a highlight; it's actual a border all the way
yeah.
around the edge of each.
It says 24 karat gold on it.
Right. Well, that's exactly why it was so inexpensive.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
they're not desirable. That there, I've seen a number of sets of china with that. They're 20th century. They were made as an inexpensive item.
Well, the problem is it's the gold is applied on top of the glaze.
Yeah.
And you can't put them in a dishwasher more than a few times before it just starts disappearing.
Yeah. And
you
usually,
can't put them in a microwave oven that'll cause it to just to spark in the microwave
yeah.
oven usually. Maybe not the more, the newest ones.
The
But they're very yeah. usable and they can be gorgeous.
Yeah. And in the marketplace today, beautiful doesn't necessarily equate to value.
They are one of the last things to sell at an estate sale if they go even on the day where
yeah.
you're practically
yeah.
giving the stuff away.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a
goodness.
Number of sets.
Oh, okay.
Number of sets
right.
like that.
But if you like it, go for it. Use it. Enjoy
yeah.
it. That's
you
the
walked
best
into
way.
Macy's to buy them, they'd probably cost you a fortune.
Just so forget what
right.
we told them. Told you about them and enjoy them.
Yeah, there you go.
Unless it says Thank Tiffany you. Or something like that on the back.
And even that is.
Yeah.
Don, good luck to you, Don. I'm going to show a coin that John in Rochester sends, a coin his mother got from a boyfriend forever ago. To me, it looks like an old Roman coin. You know, really. So I'm going to start over here. Nick, can you pass this? Take a look. How would you describe it, Nick, what you're seeing there?
It's a Roman coin.
Okay, it is a Roman coin. So but I'm going to be an appraiser.
Roman
it doesn't
coin.
Look like it. It looks legitimate.
It looks like it's legitimate.
No, it's definitely legitimate. Could be Greek.
Roman, Greek, yeah.
Wow. But at any rate, it is an ancient coin. It dates to probably at least, no, maybe it is Roman. Yeah, now I'm seeing a better image of it. It's definitely before, probably in the era of Christ or before.
Wow.
Does it have an emperor on it?
I would have to do some more research on this, but it is desirable. It is genuine. Ancient coins.
I'm going to reserve my opinion because I've seen plenty of these ancient coins that were reproduced over the years.
Yeah, and you got to
until you get your hands on it,
forgeries?
And determine what the.
Oh yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Well, and not even forgeries. They were just done for fun. They would make collections. You could buy them like 10 in a box, mounted in a box.
That's right.
Reproductions
frame.
Of coins. And, you know, people took them apart and they got loose. The kids played with them, you know. So until you actually have the metal tested and found out what it's made out of and can compare that with the description of a real one, I'm holding my.
It will have a definite weight in your hand.
Well,
that
you
a
still
fake
need
one
to have
will
the
not.
Metal tested.
And you'll have to get it graded. I mean, if you really want to sell a coin like that, I mean, unless it's a home run like a gold coin or something like that, grading is really important. Theoretically, I mean, it could have a value of $500 to $700. Most of the time, Greek coins, you see them at coin auctions. It's not in the tens of thousands or something like that, like most people would think. Depends where you buy it. If you're buying it from a retail dealer, it's whatever they want to charge. If it's an auction house, then it's probably significantly less.
All right, so I'm going to ask the College of Collectible Knowledge, as I describe this, to come over and take a look at this print here. It's not a print, I'm sorry. It is a picture. So if you guys could come over while I describe it. I have not seen something like this, and you kind of have to cock your head sideways because it's great radio right now, isn't it, me describing things? But Sheila writes to us. She's got like a little mini statue. She says it's copper. She says it's Roosevelt with a dog. Roosevelt reading by a fireplace with a dog.
It's a bookend.
It's a bookend. Okay, it's a book. It's a copper bookend. Of Roosevelt reading by the fire with a dog, and she's wondering what might it be from and what could this be worth. That's
it's
very
worth
interesting.
More
Sheila.
As a pair.
It's worth more as a pair.
If you got another bookend.
But to me, this looks like a Bradley and Hubbard bookend. If there's an impressed mark on it someplace, it's like a B and an H together. It could very well be a Bradley and Hubbard. They made a lot of copper ones. They made others with just a copper finish. But that, for some reason, that's ringing a bell. But I'm pretty sure if it's maybe 7 or 8 inches tall, I'm pretty sure it's a bookend. I mean, you can sort of tell by the shape of the base. The base is flat along the back, and it would match up with another one back to back.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
All right. Good luck to you, Sheila. Here's a question on letters. Mary writes to us and says, I have two very sweet letters to and from Grandma Moses and Leon Salter, an eccentric local Wayne County artist and Renaissance man. The letters dated 1942. He wrote to her asking her for a price on one of her paintings. She was a friend of his and stayed in his home. And she's got the letters, but do the letters themselves have any value?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
People love Grandma Moses stuff.
Really?
So
okay.
I don't know. If they're talking about some of her art, that certainly helps. The person she wrote to has a name of their own. And just her signature on things has a certain price. Anybody find coming up with anything?
I mean, theoretically, you could probably look at an auction estimate, which is a conservative view of what it could bring. It could bring more, but maybe $600 to $800, maybe $800 to $1,200, depending on the subject matter.
Letters.
I don't think it would be thousands. I just don't.
Well, $800 is a lot of money.
No, so, to some people,
yeah.
Sure.
I mean, it's, you know.
Ooh, wow. Before I get another phone call, MJ writes and says, I have a 200-year-old Mahjong set my great aunt's father brought back from China. Any idea of its potential worth?
No picture? We didn't get a
picture?
No,
she doesn't.
There are ivory Mahjong sets. There are celluloid Mahjong sets.
There are the ones where the tiles are half wood and half bone. And it needs to be complete.
The sets have made a resurgence in recent years. People are playing Mahjong again. If it's ivory, then there are very strict restrictions on the sale of that, where it can be sold. You would need to obtain a license or find somebody that has a license to sell it, in which case it could bring $600 to $800. If it's Bakelite, it's probably a $300 to $400 set.
Oh, more for the Bakelite than the ivory,
yeah,
frankly, these days.
Yeah.
Because people are repressed. One, they either want it for the Mahjong,
yeah,
or two, they want it for the Bakelite that they're reprocessing,
yeah,
into jewelry. So,
but people are playing it.
People are playing it, yes. Do an image search. See if you can track down if it was something new when he bought it and brought it back, or if it's a much older piece that he picked up and brought back at the time that,
yeah,
he came home.
A lot of times they fake ivory. You'll see a lot of figures that are carved that look like a carved ivory figure when in fact they are resin. So you have to look for a grain, and that's important in assessing.
And it needs to be very complete. People recycle the parts and pieces, but if somebody's buying to play it, they want it to be as complete as possible.
All right, let's keep going through. We've got to get through as many of your questions for the College of Collectible Knowledge before the end of the hour. Helvey in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Helvey. What did I do? Did I hit something, John? Let's try that again. Helvey, are you there? I'm going to try that one more time. Hi, Helvey. Go ahead. No.
There she is.
There's someone. Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Okay. I can. Go ahead.
I have a pocket watch that says Robert Rossdale Liverpool.
Is that the manufacturer or the person's name that owned it?
No. That's what it says. That must be the manufacturer. That's what it says on the watch itself.
How do you spell that last name?
Rosskell.
I'm assuming
Robert, and it says Liverpool.
Is it a gold or silver case?
Silver.
Okay.
I'm assuming that's British.
Yeah, it is.
Liverpool, yes, I would have,
England,
I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, are there any hallmarks in the watch?
A few $100, $200 to $300 retail.
Okay.
$200 to $300? Okay.
Yeah, and that would be consistent on the fact that it would actually work. Then you'd start getting people saying, well, I got to fix it and this and that, and
yeah,
I'll,
no,
give you $20
for it.
So, yeah, that helps.
Okay, thank you.
You're
okay.
Awesome.
Does it matter that there's a number on it?
No,
that's a production number.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck, Helvey. Thanks very much. In Geneva, this is Eric next up. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi. A lot of my mother's belongings are in a pod unit in Florida. It's just a lot of furniture.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of pieces, like there's a grandfather clock from England and a wall clock from Germany. But, I don't know how to deal with it from New York.
Well, you can either have the pod shipped up here.
Or you can send one of us down to Florida.
Yeah, it's a few thousand dollars to get it shipped up here.
Do you have a list of contents?
I have some images of as it was being packed. I don't have a list of...
Images would be helpful.
Yeah. Stop into the shop or give Jack and Nick a call, and maybe we can help you decide if it's going to be worth...
Or come to the antique appraisal fair.
Absolutely.
The 21st.
21st, 8 days from now, Saturday, April 21st. It's the WXXI Antique Appraisal Fair. That's 10 to 2. 10 to 2. 8 days from now, right here at 280 State Street in the WXXI studios. Tickets are $30. Purchase them in advance. It's easier. You can get them at the door, but it's easier just to jump online, do it at WXXI.org, and you meet the group here, the College of Collectible Knowledge, get some answers. 2 minutes left, so we can get two more in here. All right, college, come on over with me, and we're going to start with this. This is, according to our listener, Michelle, a 3-foot-tall stone statue that's marble, thinks it's Japanese.
Oh, Jack, you gotta see.
Oh, boy. We're going to need Jack for this one. So, Jack, while you come over to take a look at this, I will also say that a listener sent us this ring here that is from, let's see, a garnet signed ring, a signet ring with Diana imprinted. It belonged to her husband's third great grandfather in the late 1800s. There, if you can take a look there. So
okay, I'm taking on the ring, and actually,
Yvonne's gonna take on the ring.
I don't think it's garnet. I think it's a carved carnelian, and it's an intaglio. The image is carved out of the surface rather than a cameo, which is above the surface of the ring. Okay. And the setting looks like it's probably the most common for those type of rings. They were often collected during the European tours, and they were often in 10 karat gold or 9 karat gold, not too often in the higher carats, but it's possible. So if you take it to a jeweler, they can test the gold and tell you what carat it is. If it's 10 carat in a shop situation, you would probably see that ring for between $85 and $150,
okay,
depending on the carat.
Okay.
The statue?
Yep, we got to do it in about 35 seconds.
Okay, it looks like resin to me, which is a plastic resin. If it's not resin, it's a metal, but it's not old. It's a guardian deity, and it's an export piece of the 20th century. Not particularly valuable, not an old casting. Probably you're looking at a value of $100 to $200 on it.
Okay, well, we went through maybe a record number of emails, phone calls, upwards of 30 this hour.
Come on.
And I'll tell you what, we're going to do more 8 days from now because, listeners, you didn't get through, or you know that you've got something you want an answer for. Your friend, your relative, your mom, you want an answer on one of these items. These are the people who can help you. 8 days from now. Saturday,
actually,
April 21st.
Actually, we have a whole panel. There's 12, I think, 8, 10, something like that.
I know.
That.
I haven't met them, though. I know you guys, and you're the best.
But there's a lot. Yeah, a lot.
They're not as good. No, I'm kidding. They're all great.
And don't forget, today is Friday the 13th, and the reason that it's unlucky is the King of France arrested all of the Knights Templar because he wanted their power and their properties. And that's why Friday the 13th is an unlucky day.
There you go.
I did not know
history
that.
History in our value. Yeah.
Wow.
It was back in like 1306 that happened.
Jack and Nick Wanderman, thank you very much from Wanderman Associates. Yvonne Jordan, owner of Shop 15 Antiques and Vintage.
Thank you, Evan, as usual.
John Andrus, engineer. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great weekend.